There is a difference between amateur speakers and transformational speakers. Amateur speakers are in the business of information. I'm in the business of transformation. If you ask the audience the right questions, you will lead them to their own breakthroughs. I can't tell you how to live your life, and I can't tell you what the answer is and what the strategy is, but if I ask you the right question to lead you to your own answer, you're going to take way more action on your answer versus my answer. So the process of Story Teach Tool is I'm going to share a story, and then I'm going to teach a specific thing that I want to anchor, that one-liner, that two-liner, whatever that thing that I want to get across. But the most important thing is the tool. And the tool is...
The key to life, it isn't money. It's happiness. And when you measure how happy you are, you actually become even more happy. Our friends at GoBundance, the tribe of millionaires, use a very specific tool to measure their happiness. It's called the Life Happiness Index. And you can have it too. Go over to GoBundance.com/LHI and take your Life Happiness Index assessment. You'll rate yourself in multiple categories on exactly how happy you are and get a custom output for you specifically that you can use in developing whatever goals you have for your life. GoBundance is the tribe of healthy, wealthy, generous people who choose to live epic lives. And the tool GoBundance members use at the base of all of that is the Life Happiness Index. Get out there and grab life big. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Tribe of Millionaires podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Gruber. And today's guest, Nick Santanastasso, I mean, he's been a friend to GoBundance for a long time. Many that are listening from GoBundance know who he is. But if you don't, keynote speaker, one of the biggest in the world. He's been on, I mean, all the biggest stages all around the world. He owns China at this point, it seems like, from being over there. And he's also got an incredible brand, and he's teaching a lot of people how to unlock their voice, get on stages, get their message out, and so on. So we're going to catch up because we've had you on before, and I want to learn a lot about what you're doing now. So, Nick, good to see you, brother.
Thank you, brother. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. We're in Florida.
We are. South Florida.
So you last we spoke, last I saw you was Vegas.
Yes.
And then Salt Lake City, and then Florida.
Yeah, back to Florida.
Favorite spot?
South Florida.
Yeah.
South Florida and Columbia, favorite spot in the world.
What brought you back?
What brought me back was proximity. You know, we have a partner here who does alcohol and drug rehab centers that we do some business with, and I'm in Utah. Ratmir is in South Florida, Miami. They're sending me pictures like, yo, what are you doing in the mountains? I was isolated, you know, and so I said, I got to move back to South Florida for proximity.
Yeah.
So I moved back there, and the weather, of course, you know, you can't go wrong here.
Yeah, that's true. You have been, I mean, I've seen you everywhere recently, and it feels like you've found your niche, your spot, especially recently, on helping others get on stages. Tell me about that journey. Because what I wrote down, I wrote 20 to 30. You're 30 now or 29?
I'm 27.
27? I thought you were older than you are. Either way, you're young. And I kind of equate you in some ways to like a blue chip athlete. Coming out young, big hype, lots going on. I mean, you just exploded onto the scene, but you were super young when you exploded onto the scene. And so you've gone through some of it, you know, being COVID related, just like shit happens, right? But for you, you've gone through a lot of stuff. I've even heard you talk about, you know, at one point you were maybe more rah-rah and you've got more tactical over time or whatever. So I guess the question I'm asking is, what are some of the biggest lessons in the last year, two, 3 years, as you've gone from like early 20s, hit sensation, you know, rock star to still rock star, but with a little bit of grit, a little bit of a scar tissue on you. Like, what are some lessons you've learned over the last few years that are really informing what you're doing today?
Wow. Yeah, that's a great question. I would start off by saying I'm lost, bro. I've been in a series of reinventing myself for years. You know, so for those that know me, I started off as a prankster and entertainer. Yeah. And then I started off, and then I went into bodybuilding, then I went into speaking. And this is a great question to open up on what I'm going through currently is, I think a lot of entrepreneurship and a lot of business is losing yourself and then finding yourself. And for anyone listening right now, if you're in a season of like loss or you don't know if this is the right path, understand that being lost is a beautiful season because on the other side of loss is found, right? And so I'm still lost. I'm still trying to figure myself out. And so I've reinvented myself so many different times. So a few lessons that I've learned, you know, when I moved to Vegas, COVID crashed my speaking company and I wasn't prepared for that. And so that taught me that you need a business that is recession proof, that is COVID proof, that is pandemic proof, and something that you can do anytime, any place from a laptop or a phone. So that was a big thing for me. The other thing that I realized was oftentimes, even as high achievers and people who are doing things at a grand scale and you master something, it's hard to see outside the bottle. It's hard to see outside yourself. And so for the longest time, I would come off stage and people would be like, dude, help me do what you did. I'm like, what did I do? You're like, that thing on stage. I'm like, speak? Like, I don't teach speaking. I can't teach speaking. And they would ask me, and I would resist and resist and resist. And as we know, what resists persists, right? And so finally, I was like, maybe I should teach people how to speak. You know, maybe there's something there. And I've taken all of my knowledge from the past 6 to 7 years with Ratmir and I on creating irresistible offers, creating transformational messages, and the back end of a speaking empire and giving it to the world. And so that's what we've been doing recently. But actually, I've had a breakthrough yesterday that I'll share.
Please.
And it was pretty profound. I am a master at creating viral content in an entertaining way. I used to be a prankster. I have videos up to 80 million views, 100 million views. Like, I know how to create viral stuff. But when I got into speaking, and you mentioned this earlier, when I got into speaking, I buried that child. I buried Nick. And I was like, hey, pranking, it's entertaining. It's not fulfilling. It's not transformational. If you're going to build a name in the business world and you're going to be one of the greatest speakers, you got to be super serious. You got to be extremely tactical because you didn't go to college. You don't have any background in business. You're young. No one's going to take you serious. And so I was like, I got to get super tactical. I got to dig my well deep. And I spent the last 6 years of my life going extremely tactical and extremely deep in human behavior and psychology and communication. But yesterday, I was talking to my buddy Ryan, and he was like, I think we're too serious. I was like, well, what do you mean we're too serious? And he's like, well, bro, we've mastered the art of communication, and we've mastered the ability to transform and have people have breakthroughs. But if you look at someone like Theo Von, he's just Theo-ing. Theo is Theo-ing. Can we agree? Theo's just Theo-ing.
Great way of putting it.
And then he's got this massive audience, and then all of a sudden, he'll get serious, and then be like, yo, life's hard. And then people are like, oh, my God. And I'm like, and then I think to myself, I'm like, can it be that easy? And it's like, yeah, it can be that easy, Nick. But my programming with no legs of an arm is everything was hard for me. So if it's not hard, I'm skeptical of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's my pattern.
Yeah.
So business got to be hard and getting views got to be hard. And that's not the case, though. Yeah. So I came to this realization yesterday of what if I have the mastery of communication down now? I know how to transform. I can break people through. But what if I brought Nick back and I intertwined comedy and personal development? What if I created skits in a way where they're so funny, you're like dying laughing, but I drop a one-liner of one of my quotes and it hits? Like, what if I can bridge the gap between comedy and entertainment? And so this is a breakthrough of yesterday. What's the date? I don't know, but we can,
11th.
We can,
yeah.
The 11th, right? So I'm bringing Nick back, and it goes, another lesson as well is sell them what they want, give them what they need. Right? People want entertainment. They want low consciousness stuff. If I'm being honest, they want low conscious scroll stuff.
Yeah.
And so if I can capture them with the entertainment and then they go deeper on my content and find something that's really transformational, life changes, job's done. Right? I've done the same thing. But I think I've lost myself and I think I've gotten way too serious. But I'm also a believer that I needed to walk that path and become an expert in communication, become really tactical in irresistible offers and digital marketing, because now as an entertainer, I can capture on the back end and monetize on the back end, unlike most of people who maybe just have a merch line. I have way more deeper of a value proposition or a value ladder on the back end. Just to wrap that up, right? A few lessons that come off my brain for everyone is if you're lost, enjoy that, because it's only a matter of time before you find yourself. The second thing is what you're doing right now doesn't have to be the end all be all. The only person that keeps you in a specific box and an identity is you. And you can reinvent yourself like in the next hour, right? Go tell people that you're going to do something different. And then also find something that is pandemic proof, that is recession proof, and ideally that you can do anywhere in the world and doesn't require a lot of in-person stuff, because I was a road warrior. And now I'm thinking with the end in mind. When I started my business, I didn't think with the end in mind. I thought about money and the impact that I could get. But when you create something, think about the end in mind and reverse engineer it so it meets your life goals and your success goals.
That's so interesting on the going back to your revelation from yesterday about comedy versus, not comedy versus, but integrating comedy into what you're doing currently. It's a return to who you are. What did you say? You buried the child. You buried that child, Nick.
I did.
I love that you're finding this out now, 27, at this age, because mine was too late, or not too late, but mine was much later, I should say. Too late is like it's not possible. My brand has grown recently. It's funny you say it. My brand has grown recently, not to your level, but, you know, on the way.
No, it's been amazing, and I love it, too.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. But a lot of the reach is coming from allowing some of that inner child silliness to come out. I'm a really good observational comic, right? Like, I see things that, like, are really funny, and then I can mimic them in such a way that's non-offensive or whatever, but people just get it. And so with this audience I've built, I've been doing these sort of like brief comedy reels, and holy crap, how they land.
Yeah.
But it lets me be me. Mm-hmm. And that's something I'm learning from watching I talked about the guy yesterday that I interviewed, that, you know, $250 million, Grant Cardone, people like that you interview. And I said this to the guy yesterday, Derek. It's like they never lost their sense of being a child. They still to this day talk like an 8-year-old. Like an 8-year-old kid, it's like, oh, you want to be an NBA player? That's so cute. But by 12, when they haven't grown to 6'4", everybody in the world is going to be like, nah, you know what? You need to find out something different. And we all do. Well, many of us do. We modify.
Yeah.
I don't think you did that. You buried the child a little bit, but I applaud you for how much you've allowed yourself to be out there and put yourself out there. And given the circumstances you started with and how, I think there's what, 4 out of 12 people with Hanhart that have lived?
Yeah.
Period? Like you're one of four ever taking that and bringing that inspiration and that grittiness and that toughness to the world. And I love that you're refinding this element of yourself now, because you're right. You've got a great sense. I've seen all of your old stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. It looks like you want to say something.
Yeah. I can't believe it was right in front of my face the whole time. And I've been neglecting it, thinking I had to be someone else or thinking I had to be a specific thing. But also I find the lesson and find the gift in everything. So I believe that I had to take this path, lose myself a little bit, build a massive business and an empire and become a nerd at digital marketing and monetizing audiences to the point where I can come back and be the kid.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's the lesson, is like, life can be playful and fun, but I was programmed that it's just got to be hard. It's got to be pushed. But it's like, if you look at these guys, Theo's just Theoing. Mm. Logan is just Loganing. You know, Jake is just Jaking, right? It's like, Nick just wants to Nick. And if Nick plays more, how about this? What if we created a business where the more Nick plays, the more impact and money comes in?
Yeah. Are you getting too tactical with it, do you think, though?
Too tactical with what?
So you said you want to return to comedy. Is that enough, full stop? Or because then beyond that, you're saying, oh, I can create motivation and I can create business and all of this. Is that too tactical?
Is it too tactical?
Yeah. Like, do you just be funny and see what happens? Like, what's your take on
that? Yeah, that's a good take. That's a good question. I believe that you are doing people a disservice if you don't offer them a deeper level of transformation. And and if you don't invite them to go deeper with you, you're doing yourself a disservice and your audience a disservice. So anyone who has a following, anyone who has people following them, and they're not offering them an opportunity to go deeper, you're losing out on impact and income, but you're also doing everybody a disservice. And so my intention would be for you to love my entertainment inspirational video and then click on another video that's how to manage your emotional state and your whole life changes. So I got you in on the emotional funny stuff, but then you click on a video that totally rocks your world, job's done. So I don't think it's too tactical. I think it's intentional on how to have a real transformation with your audience. Anyone who has an audience but doesn't have an offer is not transforming their audience to the best of their ability.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. And honestly, I love the mindset, because I think for many of us, me included, it's like, oh, I don't want to ask, right? I don't want to be that sales guy, if you will, but you're seeing it as service.
Yeah, 100%. Well, it's the words too. It's like, I'm not asking for anything. I'm just inviting.
Mm.
And I am not attached to the money. I'm not attached to you saying yes. I'm so far emotionally detached from the sale that it's just an invitation. And for those that want it, you're going to take it. For those that don't, we still love you.
Mm.
That's all good. It's all gravy, right? So when you come to that point, I think coming into persuasion and sales conversation as well, you could be a shark or you could be a dolphin, right? And I'm trying to be a dolphin. People love to swim with dolphins. I mean, I didn't swim with sharks. It's not how this happened, right? But I want to be a dolphin to the point, even now on stage, for the communicators out there, for the experts, for the authority, my level of influence or my level of sales has skyrocketed when I came from a heart-centered place and let people know up front, I'm going to offer you something, and it's not for all of you, and whether you take it or not, I still love you, and I'm still going to give you massive value. And so I let people know up front. Like, anytime that I do an event, it's like, I'm going to offer you something, and it's not for everybody, but for a few of you, it's going to be absolutely perfect. And then I invite them. Because I used to be the speaker, I used to be the expert on stage, that I could do an amazing keynote, but the moment it transitioned to the pitch, I'm like, oh,
if you want,
you don't have to, you know, like all of that stuff. But
sure.
So now I come from a place of heart-centeredness, of abundance and serving. And we teach our students, if you really want to be a transformational speaker, you first need to offer, you need to have something to offer people. Because think about it like this. There have been so many years and so many events where Nick goes to an event and Nick nicks, right? And people love Nick. And then they're like, how do I get more of you? Oh, I don't have anything. They're losing.
Mm.
They want more. So if I don't have an opportunity to give them more, like, everybody loses. So everybody needs an offer.
Yeah, that's true. You at some point, I don't know if you still are, were on Tony Robbins stages. Mm. Is that still something that you do? Or are you seeing this in this phase of your life, are you feeling the need to branch out on your own a bit more?
Yeah, so I did tour with Tony with his Unleashed the Power Within for roughly 4 years. So I got to do it right before COVID, and then we did some virtual stuff and some in-person stuff after COVID. Tony realized that he's the king of over-delivering. This is my hallucination. Is Tony realized that he didn't need to do as much work to get the clothes or to get people to enroll. Mm. And so their UPW, they shifted the event a little bit. And so my spot was taken out. And so I'm no longer doing anything with Tony. But I think I got lost in that too. You know, I think I got lost in learning from one specific mentor and thinking I have to be one specific way. And I think when you consume too much content from your mentors, you can lose yourself. And so, like, this is all a process of my rebirth. I had to take a Tony detox, you know, like, even from the content, because it's sure. Like, are you just regurgitating what Tony says, or you have your own proprietary process? And so I had to step away, you know, for a few years just to recenter myself and find my message. And so no longer doing anything with Tony, but I best in the world, and I love him.
Of course. Who's your mentor? Who do you consider to be mentors now? Is it one? Is it many? What are some people that jump to mind when I say mentors of yours in any capacity?
Dr. Myron Golden. So Dr. Myron Golden, he's the one that helped me with my money paradigm and my ability to sell in a heart-centered way.
What were some of the things that you took from that tactically, or like some real things that jump out?
Yeah, the first thing is that offer creation is wealth creation. So when you understand the muscle and the skill or the tool to create irresistible offers, you will never run out of impact, and you will never run out of money. And he looked at me and he said, Nick, the difference between me buying this water bottle and me buying a private jet is there is no difference. It's all the same to me. Mm-hmm. He says, once you understand offer creation, you no longer use money in this world. You use offers. And so when you want to buy something and we want to acquire something in the materialistic world, just ask yourself, how many offers do I need to sell? Or how many offers do I need to enroll people into in order for me to get that thing? You want the roles, you only need 5 offers, right? So I don't think in terms of money no more. I think of terms of how can I serve people at a deeper level, and how many people do I need to get to say yes on their dreams in order for me to have whatever I want.
How do you maintain confidence that you can deliver on whatever it is that you're saying you can do?
Yeah, that's a big one, because if you don't have certainty in the offer, you can't sell it.
Right.
And so for me, I've spent a lot of years creating terrible programs that weren't good because I was just learning. Like, I thought it was good. And Ratmir said, my partner said something to me. He said, Nick, if you think you're going to create an offer once and be relevant for 10 to 15 years, he's like, you got another thing coming for you. He said the people who stay around for 10, 15, 20 years with a deep, meaningful product and an irresistible offer are constantly iterating, they're constantly upgrading, and they're constantly gathering data from their people to make it better. And so I'm a firm believer that when you're creating an irresistible offer, what you can do immediately is get a beta group, a test group. Hey, Jamie, I'm looking for 5 entrepreneurs that are doing $100,000 or more, and I'm going to help you get your first passive income asset or first real estate property, right? I'm only looking for 5. And then I would get that beta group, and I would get them in at a discounted price. And I would say, hey, because you're in at a discounted price and this is the beta group, I'm going to be surveying you and you're going to help me create this program. So when the future real estate people come in, it's even better. How's that sound for you? Now they're a part of it and they're helping you create this offer. So I would help them get the results. But while I'm helping them get the results, I would survey them. What's not making sense? What are the roadblocks? What can I teach better? What are additional value adds that would tip you over more? And I would gather all that data. And then at one point, I would look back and have this really sexy offer. Mm-hmm. And then I can take that beta group, get those results, capture those testimonials, and with those testimonials and that social proof, launch it to the main group. Does that make sense?
It does. I think about the word irresistible offers, and I want to get back to mentors. I don't want to forget that, because I want to see if there's any more that you have. But this is really good. When I get to the idea of irresistible offers, in my mind, I think of a few different elements of it. There is the proof of value. That might be the talk that you gave or the challenge that you did or whatever it might be, right? There's proof of value. So if I'm the person that's going to buy this offer, take this offer. Okay, I see proven value. That's one. I see certainty in the offer, like confidence in the offer. And then I see delivery on the offer, on you know, whatever the product might be. All of those have to be in place, I'm sure. I think. One, tell me if I'm wrong on that, or if you want to tweak that at all. But two, which of those, if you only had to work on one, or maybe the one that most people don't realize is the one they need to work on, like which of those aspects might be undervalued or under, what's the word I'm looking for, not executed effectively in order to make an irresistible offer. I want to kind of get to the anatomy of an irresistible offer. Like, what is it and what elements of it do folks need to really focus in on and maybe are undervaluing or underestimating?
Yeah, I would say the delivery of the pitch is extremely important, because you can have an amazing offer, but if you're shaky and you don't know how to sell in a heart-centered way, like, it's totally going to crash and no one's going to buy. And I've been there, so that I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah.
I would say the other thing that makes up an irresistible offer is you get obsessed with the people in the room and identify what are all the beliefs or stories that would hold them back from saying yes. And then when you identify those beliefs and those things that would hold them back from saying yes, what can you add in the offer to disarm that belief or that objection so it doesn't even come up? And so when you understand all of that data and you create an offer around the problems and the roadblocks that they're having in the audience, when you present your offer, for example, I have a speaking offer. So if I make an offer, I'd say, some of you may be thinking like, well, I don't have anything to offer. And then I'm like, that's exactly why inside of this, we have an offer creation strategy session, right? Where we're going to help you extract your expertise and create into an irresistible offer. Now, some of you probably thinking like, well, okay, I have an offer, Nick, but I don't know how to speak. What if I were to tell you, I'm going to give you my exact template of my $50,000 keynote and walk you through step by step so you can build your own transformational keynote. So you see what I'm doing?
Yeah.
So everything they offer is disarming their objections. And so if you understand the objections and the beliefs beforehand, you can disarm them in the presentation of the offer. So by the time that you ask for the yes, they have no other objection to give you.
While we're down in this valley, I want to keep digging a little deeper. Because what comes to mind is price point. What have you learned as far as, you know, you hear some say, you know, like, go as high ticket. Like, that's the spot.
Yeah.
Others say, well, I'll start with a low ticket, top of funnel, small offer. Somebody buys, they're going to buy the bigger one or whatever. What have you learned from a pricing standpoint as far as offer?
Yeah, so a few things when it comes to value ladder. The first thing is most people will teach you to work from the bottom up, so the free thing first. But my hallucination is that I would work from the top down, right? So say it's a mastermind or a one-on-one. I would map out, like, what is the sexiest, most premium offer that I can give people? And that is like my top thing, even without price, that's my top thing. And then as you move down your value ladder, all you're doing is taking away nuts and bolts and proximity.
Interesting.
So if you do the heavy work up front, you've basically built out most of your value ladder. And as you come down to the course or the mentorship and the inner circle, whatever it is, you're just taking out things. And so if you do the heavy work on like, what are all the amazing things that I can give my people, then most of the work is done. The other thing that I would say is the language that we use with our students is we don't use high ticket offer. We use premium value offer. And the reason why we share that is because when you say high ticket, I have a high ticket offer, the emphasis is on the money that you're receiving. High ticket, okay, great. But if you use the word premium value offer, the emphasis and the programming of you is on the premium value that you're offering your people. Yeah. You're less focused on the price point, you're focused on the premium transformation that they're going to receive. Make sense?
It does.
So, and then another thing is price is a representation of brand. Sometimes the best isn't the cheapest and the cheapest isn't the best, right? And so me, at my caliber, if I was like, yeah, I have a transformational speaking mentorship, and they're like, how much is it? I'm like, $1,000. You'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Right? And so understand that price is a representation of brand, and premium price attracts premium people. There are people, including myself and probably you, that you wouldn't buy something because it's too cheap.
Many times.
You're like, I don't want that.
Right.
Right? I want the best. I'm premium. So premium price attracts premium people. Now, you don't need to have everything premium. You can have your low ticket and your mid ticket, but understand that your price is going to attract the type of people that is correlated to that price.
It's so true. Because if you told me that there's this high value, premium value thing that is going to, you know, take care of this, that, or the other issue that I'm trying to solve, whatever it might be, and you tell me it's $1,000 or $1,500, my question immediately is like, well, how premium can that be? Like, that just feels like wasted money. But if you said the same exact thing but said $15,000, not saying, like, take my money, but at the same time, I'm more like, okay, now that interests me. There's something to that. There's something that I understand the investment of, you know, the access to you or whomever or the time that I'm going to get, the proximity I'm going to get. So that makes a lot of sense. The other thing I'm thinking when you say reverse that, so you're talking about your premium value offer up front and then you sort of stair-step it down by removing features. Yeah. Does it price anchor? Is there a psychology to that as well? Like, in my mind, I'm like, you said $20,000. All right, it comes with all that. I'm not ready to spend $20,000. And then all of a sudden you drop it to 10 on something that you take something away, maybe 5.
Yep.
People that are going to buy the 20, they're going to buy the 20. But if I'm not, I'm not going to buy anything. But if I'm going to buy 5, I can buy 5 because my mind was actually starting to get ready for 20.
Yep.
I was almost at 20. So 5 doesn't sound so bad anymore.
100%.
Is that?
100%. There's a few things. The first thing what you mentioned is it definitely a price anchor, right? So when I go out on stage, and by the way, for anyone who's communicating, anyone who's offering something, you should always price anchor based on your highest premium or your premium value offer. Even if you don't have one, go create one.
Yeah.
Right. So when I come out on stage, one of the first things that I'll say, if I'm offering people an invitation to go deeper, if it's my own event, I'll say, listen, we get 2 days together or we get 1 day together. Now, what's pretty amazing about that is for my VIP offer where people spend 8 hours with me, it's $150,000. Mm. Y'all get this for just whatever you pay for the ticket. Like, can we clap that up? Oh, yeah, this is amazing. And this is genuine. But now the price is anchored, like, wow, it's $150,000 for Nick's one-on-one. So when it comes to the time for the offer and I offer you a $35,000 mentorship, you're like, that's a no-brainer because your brain was already getting ready for $150,000. Yeah. So there is a play on psychology in a genuine way. But ultimately, let me make this clear, is these tactics that we use them in a genuine way to move people from a state of fear to faith so they can take action on something that truly changes their life.
Yeah.
It's another thing if you're using these tactics to sell something that ain't gonna change anyone's life and it's just a money grab, like shame on you. But for the people that genuinely have a product or a solution, it is your duty to get people to say yes so they change their life.
Yeah.
That's like when you're on stage, your sole duty is to sell them something, yeah, whether you think it or not. And the people who don't agree with that, they have a bad relationship with sales and they're definitely missing out on impact and transformation.
Yeah, Cardone said, I was talking to him, he said, I mean, essentially selling is living. He's like, I'm always selling. Right now I'm selling you, you're selling me. Like we're always selling. Like
yeah,
he doesn't understand how he gets vilified for constantly selling. Because to your point, I mean, take it at face value. He believes in what he's offering. He feels as though he can create transformation. And then, I mean, you talk about this in terms, and we're going to get into it, speaking, but like you're moving people from passive to active, right? From passive engagement to active engagement, from passive action, I guess, in your life to active, actually taking action in your life.
Yeah.
That all makes sense. Okay. Let's dive into speaking at this point. Because I think this is where, I don't know, this is where I'm consuming what you do right now, man. I get so much from it. And at one point, you probably don't remember, you gave me some time and went through a one-on-one with me, and I took so much from that. Even down to, what was it? I did this. I don't think I told you this.
The joke. I remember.
I did the joke. And dude, so for those listening, Nick's advice was, I was going into a speech in Peoria, Illinois, and he said, look, man, go up there. You got to do it confidently and say, I forget what it was, but it was something like, put up your hand if you are stuck in a situation you don't want to be in, or something like that. And then, okay, well, put up your hand if you don't want to make a change, whatever it was. And then you're like, put up your hand if no matter what I say, you're not going to put up your hand. Dude, that was like, people were like, who is this guy?
Yep.
First question, who is this guy? Second question. Third question was, I like this guy.
Yep.
Just like that.
Yep.
Out of my hand. Dude, I don't even know what I said the rest of the speech, the rest of the talk, but it was great advice. The other piece of advice that you gave then, and I wonder if it's still the same, was a concept or a structure of story teach tool.
100%.
Is that still, and if it is, can you talk about what is story teach tool?
100%. So there is a difference between amateur speakers and transformational speakers. Amateur speakers are in the business of information. They pie charts and look at my things and all that stuff. And that's great, but I'm not in it for that. I'm in the business of transformation. Now, if we're in the business of transformation, we must understand a few things. The first thing, going back to story teach tool, is that if you ask the audience the right questions, you will lead them to their own breakthroughs. I can't tell you how to live your life, and I can't tell you what the answer is and what the strategy is, but if I ask you the right question to lead you to your own answer, you're going to take way more action on your answer versus my answer.
Yeah.
So the process of story teach tool is I'm going to share a story that resonates, right? I'm going to resonate it back to the audience, whatever that is, and then I'm going to teach a specific thing that I want to anchor, right? That one-liner, that two-liner, whatever that thing that I want to get across. But the most important thing is the tool. And the tool is one or a series of thought-provoking questions that allows them to integrate exactly what you just taught them. And you can turn anything to a story teach tool, right? So, like, for example, it's like when I was 16 years old, I wanted to become a wrestler. I chopped my arm off. I became a wrestler, blah, 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 blah. My question to you is, hopefully it's not a limb like me, but what are the very people in your life that you need to cut off that no longer serve you? Mm. And you, that's the question. That's right? when the audience goes, you know it's hitting, right? And so you just did it unconsciously.
Yeah.
And so I was able to share my own story, relate it back to you, but give you a tool to make it integratable. Is that a word? Like integratable, we'll just claim it.
It is.
It is now. Integratable to the audience.
Yeah.
And so I always tell my students, you can have an okay story, you can have an okay teach, but homeboy, if you come with a crazy thought-provoking question, you're going to lead someone to a breakthrough. And then they will always remember how you made them feel and the insight or the light bulb that went off in the audience. And so that's still the methodology. Story, teach, tool. but I'm all about the tools. And I've had mentors be like, why do you do that facilitation stuff? And why do you ask so many questions on stage? It's like, you know, you do your stuff. We'll see the ratings and I'll do my stuff and we'll see who really transformed. Yeah. Right. And when people come out of my session, they're like, bro, that was like 10 years of therapy in one session. That's because I just knew what questions to poke at you.
The other part that you talk a lot about, and I'm curious for some thoughts on this, is how to take an audience, and I think that's one of them, tool, from a passive state to an active state. Mm. Being passive in terms of like sitting back and just kind of consuming and maybe going, to actively sort of embedding whatever you're teaching from stage or embedding whatever the lesson is from what you're putting out there. How do you go from active, I think from what I heard, or from passive, I should say, from what I heard, somebody listening will retain 7%, right? So how do you go from 7% to 50% or 80%? Like, how do you get from passive to active?
100%. And this is my favorite thing. This is the one thing that if our students and anyone listening just focus on this, you will stand out from all the other speakers on the lineup. Because one, they think it's corny, or they're uncomfortable. They never did it before. They just think it's like a Tony Robbins thing. It's like, bro, if you have information, by the way, how many times, I'm going to go on a rant here, but how many times do you see these mega superstar speakers, they get up on stage and they're speaking and no one's writing notes because they didn't tell them the right notes. They didn't lead them. You have people just yelling at the audience like, okay, great, you brought in a bunch of ticket sales, but are they really retaining the information? I'll outspeak you all day, right? Just because I know how to make the audience retain it. So let's go back to how do you get the audience to be bought into an active learning state? Well, the first thing we must understand is that knowledge is the precursor to experience. And what that means is if I don't tell people why we're doing what we're doing, they're going to attach their own meaning to it. So I have to educate them on why we're doing what we're doing before we do it. It's a preframe. So for example, I'll go out on stage and be like, you know, how many of you want to learn something today? Okay, we're in agreement. You want to learn something today? Great. Well, if you're in agreement, we must understand that all learning is state-based. All learning is what? Boom, state-based. Now they're calling back out to me. Now, I let them know, school was boring. This ain't going to be like school. We ain't doing school here, right? And if we really want to retain it, I'm going to give you cues. Can I give you tools so you retain the information? Yes, they're bought in. Okay, great. I'm going to tell you to yell out to me. I'm going to tell you to raise your hand. I'm going to tell you to wave, smack your neighbor, whatever it is. That's not to be motivational. That's so you retain and keep your body in a learning state, because what I'm about to teach has the ability to transform your life if you want it. Is that okay? Bought in. Now they understand why we're waving our hand. But if you just come out on stage, you're like, say yes. You know, they're like, what are we doing, right? So tell people why you're doing what you're doing.
That's interesting.
Right? And so if you educate them, now they understand and they attach an empowering meaning to why they're, I'm raising my hand because I want to learn things. I'm staying engaged because I want to retain.
Yeah.
So I'm empowering the people. But also, if we're talking about psychology of a room, everybody wants to do what everybody's doing.
Yes.
So if I get a few people raising their hand, there's going to be, at the end of that speech, if you ain't raising your hand, you're like, I need to be raising my, look at all these people, right? Same thing when buying. If few people run to the back of the table,
yeah,
everybody else wants to run to the back of the table.
No, that's a great point. I think there's almost like a speaker in some ways feels like they're a magician. They don't want to reveal the trick. Where you're saying, like, just put the trick out there. Hey, I'm going to make you engage. I'm going to make you active. Otherwise, you're not going to retain this information. So you're just sort of laying it out there for them.
100%.
Right?
It's a disarm. It's called the disarm, right? It's letting know exactly what we're doing. I'm not hiding anything. I don't want to hide anything. I like to call myself a magician, and my other identity is Mystic Mac, which I really appreciate. But
is that real?
That's a whole nother Mystic Mac. Yeah, I'm a big, like, quantum theory, Joe Dispenza, heart-centered pineal gland, rabbit hole guy. So that's a whole nother tip. We can go wherever you want.
We might have to. Yeah, Mystic Mac. I'm going to write that down.
But disarm the people. Let them know exactly why we're doing what we're doing and get them bought into that, and then it's easy. It's the same thing with asking permission to sell someone something, right? Before you go, like, is this my camera? Y'all want this, right? If you want to increase conversions, you want to increase sales, wherever you are, whether it's on stage, one-to-one or one-to-many, ask for permission to sell them something. What does that mean? Well, before you go into offer, you say, how many of you got value out of this tier today? Awesome. Would it be okay with you, with your permission, if I take just a few minutes to talk about a unique opportunity to have for you? Yes? Great. Now the pressure's off. Mm. You didn't blindsign them with a pitch. You know, when you're blindsigning someone with a pitch, you know you're blindsigning them with a pitch. Your whole physiology changed. You're like, here we go. It doesn't need to be like that. Your nerves don't need to change at all. The physiology doesn't need to change at all. Ask them for permission to talk about your amazing opportunity and watch your nerves stay cool, calm, and collected.
That's very cool. This is really interesting, because like what started for in my mind about, like, all right, how do you deliver a speech? Where you are is like, a speech is a business. A talk is a business.
Ooh,
right?
Yeah,
it's way deeper than that. And I think for the entrepreneur who has the whether this is on social or on stage, who has the idea that like getting out there would be kind of cool. I think it feels goofy because it's like just a vanity thing. But what I see and feel in you, the intensity of it is like, you don't get this, man. Like, I'm not a speaker just to speak. I'm a speaker with an intention. There's a business here. This is a businessman's move. It's not a, oh, I like to be on stage so everybody loves me. I mean, part of the ego likes that, right? But it's there's a funnel. There's a back end. There's a business behind this. Is that fair?
100%. I'm orchestrating in a
good
genuine
word.
Way,
yeah.
Right? And that's why, even to this day, I can go into a room and I can take less cash up front because, and I used to not do that because I didn't have anything in the back end, but I can go into a room. Think about this. You have an event organizer. They market the event. They put butts in the seats. They pay a bunch of money. They pay for the venue. And then a transformational speaker like me comes along, impacts them, over-delivers, and then offers them a free gift on the back end. And then I capture all the leads and I don't even have to work for it.
Yeah.
I just had to be transformational and be genuine, over-deliver, and invite them to go deeper. So you can leverage other people's stages, and you're exactly right. I love the way that you put it. The speech is a business.
Mm.
It's an orchestration. It's intentional. It's methodical. It's designed to over-deliver, to get people to transform, and it's designed to get them to take action on the thing that I have on the back end.
How much, and this is going to be an odd question, I think, but how much does the speech matter, the actual content of the speech? I know it matters, but in the context of active versus getting them to an active state versus a passive state, having a transformational offer, I think, you know, for a lot of people that might be thinking about a speech, is like, what do I call it? What do I say? Do I need three things? Like, the three ways in 2024, like, do I need that? Like, how does it structure? How much is speech structure a component? I mean, I know it's a component, but is it the vast majority of what is important here? Is it 20% of it? And really the rest is where you anchor the stage, the motion that you have, how you engage the audience. Like, what is the, where, how much is the speech relevant?
That's a great question. I think I would say the structure of the speech gives you the certainty to come off certain on stage.
So it's really for you.
So let me break this. Yeah, right. So we talk about their percentage, right? Like, only a few percentage is the words you say and how you say it. But actually, 55% of speaking is actually physiology. Well, you're not going to have the right physiology if you're not certain on the speech.
That's fair.
Fair enough.
Unless
right?
you're unique. Like Gary Vee, I think, just goes up and talks.
That's reps, bro.
Right?
But that's reps.
That's true.
That's repetition,
true. Yeah.
Right? So, homeboy, if you can speak 1,000 times, I can run on any stage and speak whatever I want and drop some F-bombs and get people to clap, like, all day. I could do it.
Yeah.
For sure. So it's just
point. Repetition. Yeah.
So I would say for people that starting out, especially the analytical brains out there, the structure and the methodology gives you the certainty to come off on a greater physiology.
That's
because
so
if you don't believe what you're saying in the speech, you're going to feel it. And I'm living proof of this because for the first 2-3 years of my career, I had no content. My message was, if I can do it, you can do it. Like, that's all I had. And I would just share personal stories with absolute certainty. I was delusional in an empowering way. Like, even when I sucked, I was like, I'm the best in the world, best speaker in the world. And I would deliver with that certainty. And so when you look at people on stage, you can feel their uncertainty and you can feel their certainty. But also, sales is a transfer of certainty as well. So I would say the structure of the talk gives you the certainty to have the right physiology on stage.
The structure of the talk. That's so, I never thought of that angle, that really the the structure is for you. It's less for the audience. The structure of the speech is for you more than it might be for the audience. I mean, of course, the audience
doesn't even
has to
know
get
what's
back.
Going on though.
Right.
Right. And for example, it's like talking about the technique of future pacing, which we use. It's like, all you have to do is future pace the audience. Over the next 45 minutes, we're going to be talking about the three things that AI will do in 2024. Is that okay? Say yes. Boom. Great. They have permission. All day. They don't know what the structure is.
Yeah.
But when you future pace them and let them know at least what you're talking about, it takes the thinking out of the brain, and then you're free to do whatever you want. But you're right. The structure is for you, so you have certainty in what you're delivering.
Is that when you're working with clients on this, that you're teaching, you know, how to be effective from stage, is the biggest challenge that they have that, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, or is there something different? Like, what's the challenge they think they have, and what's the challenge you realize they have?
Yeah, it depends on the level of people, but there are a few challenges. Actually, most high-achieving entrepreneurs don't think they have a good enough story.
Isn't that funny?
It's crazy.
Right?
Right? It's like, bro, look what you built. And that's what we're talking about. It's like, you can't see outside the bottle. And so sometimes it takes a mentor or a coach to be like, no, this is amazing. And you need to go at least speak once to get evidence that people like it. Right? So I would say the first challenge is people don't think they're qualified to speak, or they don't think their story is good enough. And I'll handle that right now. Speaking is like music. It's opinionated. meaning there are always going to be people that love Gary Vee, and there's always going to be people that don't like Gary Vee. There's always going to be people that love me, and there's always going to be people that don't love me. Just be yourself and be the authentic filter that filters out the type of women and men that won't do business with you and the people that will do business with you. I would say the other thing, the big problem that gets in the way, is people don't have an offer. And those are a little bit newbie. It's a little bit more beginner. We work with those people as well, where it's like, hey, I have knowledge. Maybe I have expertise. I have a story, but I haven't extracted it into how can I give it to the world, right? And I'm a firm believer that you're most qualified to teach your younger self. So for those that are listening right now, if you ask yourself, where was I 2, 3, 4 years ago? What breakthroughs, what strategies, what techniques did I need that catapulted me to this level? That's where you're going to find most of your curriculum and your gold, right? And then I would say the other thing is just fear of speaking.
Yeah.
You know, fear of speaking. And the fear of speaking, let's break this down. The fear of speaking is actually you focus on the wrong thing. Fear of speaking comes from you giving energy to an undesirable outcome that hasn't even happened yet. I'll give you an example. I'm on my way here to see you. I'm on a call with a client. And he goes, one last question. I love you, by the way, if you're listening. One last question. He's like, what if this next speech, like I bomb it and I don't sell anything? And then my confidence goes down. And then his brother was like, that's a terrible question. I was like, yeah, that's a terrible question. I was like, what your brain is already doing is giving energy towards an undesirable outcome that hasn't even happened yet. And you're feeling it in the moment. As a successful person, we don't give energy towards undesirable outcomes. We only give energy towards desirable outcomes. But I said, on the flip side, I hope you sell and no one buys so you feel that you're not perfect. And it humbles you, and you get data, you iterate, and you upgrade, because there's been plenty of stages where I've sold something and no one is in the back trying to buy from me.
Wow.
So go feel it, right? And also I said, you're delusional to think that you're going to go on a perfect winning streak in speaking. You're not perfect. This ain't going to be a winning streak. And give yourself permission to get messy and to do it janky. Do it anyway. Mm. Just get out there.
Is a book an offer?
Book's an offer.
Book is an offer.
Book's an offer.
Is a free...
You want to? Oh. There's some sauce on a book.
Hit me.
Book is one of the greatest indoctrination tools. Now, if you're writing a book, there is two massively important things that you want to put in your book in order to transform people's lives and allow them to go up your value ladder or indoctrinate them. And empowering, when I say indoctrinate, empowering them in good beliefs.
I get you.
Right?
Yeah.
Not the government indoctrination terms, right? We're talking about real empowering indoctrination, right? So the first thing that you want to put in your book is you want to anchor two identities. Right. So my book, my first book, and I'm coming out with a second, but my first book is Victim to Victor. Mm. Now, why do we want to anchor two identities? Because I want to show them the contrast of how they're thinking and where their thinking could be. And if I continuously anchor that inside the book, by the end of the book, they are not operating as a victim anymore. They're operating as a victor. So that's the first thing. So your book is an opportunity to shift them into a specific identity. Now, my brand as of now is I help entrepreneurs become transformational speakers. So in my next book, it's going to be, hey, this is how amateur speakers think, and this is how amateur speakers conduct business, and this is how they speak. This is how transformational speakers. So now they're adopted that identity. And the second thing that you want to put in your book is you want to sell them something in the book. Mm-hmm. You want to offer them something to go deeper after the book. And guess what? If you do a great job about shifting their identity and then you offer them something on the back end of the book, if it's in alignment with their new identity, they got to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. Is a free lead magnet or a free something an offer?
100%. It's one of the sexiest things that my business is based off of, is giving free value. Now, I'll break down some sauce here. Free value is a way where you can capture leads on other people's audiences, and there's like no strings attached. It's not selling anything, right? So this is especially good for people who maybe are struggling with offers and they're scared to sell something. It's like, you can go give away something for free. Can you give a gift away?
Yeah,
are
sure.
You capable of that? Yeah, okay, yeah. Great. I'm capable of that. So you can use a free gift anywhere, like free gift on this podcast, free gift on any stage, any Instagram Live, Facebook Live. Like, if you can capture or give people the free gift, you're going to start building your email list. But also, when you give a free gift, what it's doing is it's showing you the people in the audience that raise their hand and say, I want more of you, Jamie. And then you're like, wow, there's a lot of people that want more of me. Right? So I think free gift is amazing. Another psychology upgrade for people giving out free resources is you want to lead people away from pain versus leading them towards pleasure with your free resource. Now, let me break this down. It's going to increase your conversion rates by hundreds and hundreds of percents. And learn this from Myron. If you're on the side of the street and someone runs up to you and say it's a homeless guy, or he looks pretty sketchy, he's like, oh, can I use your phone? Like, you're probably a little bit hesitant to give him your phone. depending on who you are and how judgmental you are and how sketchy you are and where you are, right? But if you're on that same street and you got jumped by five dudes and you're bleeding out and that same homeless dude came up to you and said, I'll call the ambulance for you, you wouldn't think twice to hand over your phone for him to get you out of pain. So when you're giving out a free gift, understand that maybe people didn't get to the point where they like, know, and trust you yet. And so when you tell them, like, and by the way, the seven steps to seven figures, they're like, yeah, go screw yourself. Like, I don't know you, bro. Like, that, there's so much of that out there. But if you were like, here are the three steps that hold people back from getting their first real estate investment property, they're like, oh, I want to know the pitfalls.
Interesting.
So if you lead them away from pain and they get value out of that free thing, you now have the like, know, and trust to lead them towards pleasure.
That is massive. I've never, ever heard that before, but that makes so much sense. What am I going to step in? We're worried about that more than, like you said, I've heard it a million times. Oh, the five ways to get here, the three things to
You're
do
like,
to
I'm
get
good.
This.
Not
it's,
yet.
It's true, right? Yeah. But knowing what the pain is or the potential pain, I think that's why we listen to podcasts, to be honest with you. It's like listening to a guy like you talk about, this is what I learned on stage. Like, oh, there's a pitfall. I always make this point with Bigger Pockets, a big real estate podcast. Yeah. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, what do you think? What's the question at the end? It's like, what's the biggest thing holding people back from... Or it was the big question. I haven't listened to that podcast in a while. Holding people back from taking action. My take on that was people are listening to this podcast, Bigger Pockets, as an example, and they're hearing an investor talk about their pitfalls, and they write them all down. They got like a list of 150 episodes, 150 pitfalls, and then they use that against every deal they look at, and it's like they're not weighting them. It's like, well, this is a minor pitfall if it happens, right? Yeah. Like, this is a big one. But to your point, why people are listening is, yes, to be inspired, yes, to learn. But what they really take away is, what did they do wrong? Ooh, don't do that.
100%.
Like that, now I know the pitfall. That's a, man, I've never heard that. That's Myron.
Yeah.
Wow. Who's another mentor, by the way? Does another one jump to mind? I meant to come back to that, but.
Yeah, I have Dr. Myron Golden, and then I've learned from Eileen Wilder when it comes to how to put together your own masterclass or your own virtual challenge. So the methodology on how to put together your own virtual event and then sell from the back end of that. So that's been a game changer for me.
Is that a pre-speech thing? When do you do a virtual event?
It could be multiple things. I mean, you could do a keynote and then sell a ticket to your virtual event, right?
I like
you
that.
Let me break this down. Last month, I did an organic launch to a masterclass. It was $47 for the ticket, and I let them know inside of the, it's going to be 5 to 6 hours, and I'm going to teach you the components of being a transformational communicator, how to acquire leads and build your business through communication. And we sold 100 tickets organically at $47. 95% of people showed up to it. 5 hours in, about 90% were still there. I made an offer for $6,000. I also price anchored. I had a 50K offer as well. And I did $170,000 in 5 hours.
Damn, dude.
That's because immersion causes conversion. What does that mean? The more time people spend with you.
Thank you. Right? It was bouncing around and they're like, immersion causes conversion.
Right? Yeah, go for it. What does that mean? I'm mind reading already, right? And so, what does that mean? It's like the more time people spend with you in a room just like this, the more they like, know, and trust you, and the more they want to do business with you. And so it's one thing to sell something off an hour keynote. It's another thing for you to spend 6 hours with Baby Yoda, me, right? And then me to offer you something. The buying resistance is down. I've already given you so much value. You're like, if I've gotten all this for $47, I can't imagine what I get for Nick when I pay, right? And so Eileen and Joe would be another great, great mentor.
What's her name, Eileen?
Eileen Wilder.
Wilder. Wow. Okay. I haven't heard of her either. I know I've heard of Dr. Myron Golden. So any other mentors?
Of course, you know, from it's crazy when I rattle these names off because they're friends now. It's like, but like Russell Brunson, yeah. Right? Whether you like Russell or not, one of the greatest marketers, if not the greatest marketer that is still alive right now. So Russell Brunson. And then also my greatest mentors are people who are doing similar things at a greater level. Right. So anytime that I'm creating a new offer, anytime that I want to try a new strategy, I'll find someone in my niche that is already doing it at a high level, and I will analyze everything about them. I'll buy their stuff. I'll jump into their email sequence. I'll document everything. Well, Ratmir will document everything. And then basically we'll be like, okay, how can we build something? Because if you look at it, take someone like Tony Robbins, for example. If you're like, okay, I want to run a virtual masterclass or I want to run a virtual challenge and I don't really know where to start. It's like, well, let's take the GOAT. Let's join his challenge. Let's document everything. Let's see how his framework is. How many reminders is he doing? Is he doing text reminders? Is he doing email reminders? What kind of gifts? What is the homework? All of it. Because they have millions of dollars already tested with their budgets and their marketing team. They've already tried it. You can get all the data and then make it yours.
Success leaves clues,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 100%.
At the end of the day.
100%.
You said at the beginning that you're lost, all are, right? And I love what you said, like in that you find, you'll eventually be found. How do you, being lost, do you anchor to anything in the future? Is there a vision? Is there an outcome? Or is that why you're lost, that you don't have a clear vision or outcome? I'm kind of curious of your take on vision and if you even have one right now.
Yeah, this is a great point. When I say lost, I think when I mention lost is I have this yearn that I'm supposed to be bigger. There's supposed to be more exposure. There's supposed to be a bigger audience. There's a better way of communicating or delivering it. And I haven't found it, or I've been repressing it or suppressing it. Right. And so for me, I think I'm in a rebirth and I am finding myself. I'm not totally lost, but no, I also believe as humans, like, we have no idea what we're doing in this human experience anyway, and we're just figuring out. So we're all lost anyway. No one really knows what they're doing, right? I mean, I don't know. Look up at the sky. Look up at the moon. No one really can tell you what it is. I mean, they can tell you, but who knows? You popped out of your mom and they said bird and you said bird. They said cat. They said cat. They said moon and you're like moon. Who knows what's going on, right? So anyway, that's a whole nother story
for a
whole nother time, right? But I think everybody should take their power back and have some sort of compelling vision, right? Like, that's our God-given right, if I can say that. That's our God-given right of being able to dream and being able to create a compelling vision that makes you feel good. And when you feel good, you want to take action. And so regardless of any time that I'm lost, we are always creating a compelling vision of what life is going to look like, right? Like, okay, $5 million in revenue. Okay, house in Colombia. Okay, I only want to speak 4 times a month. I want 3 months off where no one talks to me, right? Like, you're building this out. And then I'm a big believer, going into like the heart-centered pineal gland stuff, if we shall, is set an intention, set a goal, and then surrender to how it plays. I think oftentimes as entrepreneurs, we get caught up in this pattern of trying to control the outcome. And when you try to control how your goals are going to manifest, you're blocking the mystical and the magic from happening. Okay. The mystical and the magic happens when you least expect it, when you're not attached to the outcome. I mean, how many of, including you and everybody listening, how many times has your goals manifested in a way that you didn't even think about?
It's all of them.
That's the best ways, right? That's like the, oh my God, no way. The surprise, the mystic, the magical. So you can't welcome the magic and the mystical to happen into your life if you're trying to control all your plan. Mm. So understand, like, set a plan, set an intention, set some targets, but surrender to how it's going to happen. You're going to pivot. You're going to fall. It's not going to go the way. You're going to have a bunch of disruption. But those are the best moments where you look up. You're like, did you see that? Or that thing happened. Oh, we just got connected to that guy. Or we just sold $1 million in one day. Like, when you least expect it and those things happen, I want to live for more magic. I
love that. Mystic Mac just came
Mystic
out.
Mystic Mac.
There he is.
Right? I'm a magician. Right? How did Nick create this life? It's like, Nick's got the car and he's got the house and he's around beautiful women and he's impacting lives. It's because as a man, and this is new, so I wasn't always Mystic Mac, right? And maybe I was doing it, but I didn't know what I was doing it.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But I'm a true believer that your brain is the antenna and your heart is the magnet. Now, as men, we weren't taught to get in our heart. We were taught to nut up, you know, be man, right? And that's great, and it gets you to some place. But if you look around at men's mental health, that's why most men are anxious, they're depressed, they're overweight, they're suicidal, because no one taught them how to feel and no one taught them how to heal, right?
Yeah.
And so my intention going into this year is to be heart-centered, to be whole, and to serve from that place. Tony would say, when you're in your head, you're dead. When you're in your heart, you're smart, right? But understand that when you're heart-centered and you're in a beautiful place of joy, gratitude, appreciation, reflecting on like how far you've come, you will pull people into your life. It's quantum theory, but you will pull people into your life and you won't even have to move. And so when I understood that, I looked at Ratmare, I said, we created all this by pushing. This was all breaking down doors, breakthrough, right? Like matter versus matter. I was like, what if we just became more heart-centered and figured out what felt right and went with those things? Could it be that easy? But then your brain's like, no, it's got to be hard, right? It's crazy. So I'm at this point now where we have targets, we have intentions. I'm surrendered to how the outcome plays out. And I want to embrace and invite more mystical magic into my life.
I love that, man. There's so much we can go into there. We're a little pressed for time on it, but there's so much we can go into there. Something that was on my mind I wanted to ask you about was, and it's funny how you started with lost. And I know what you mean by lost. I know you're not literally lost, but like, you know, you're kind of still figuring it out. We all are, right? A few years ago, two years ago, I remember you saying to me, maybe you said it more publicly, and if this shouldn't be public, just tell me, we'll edit it out, that you had built an audience, big audience, but maybe not the right audience. Like, you just sort of, like a bunch of people were following you. Then you did a post. This was you and Trump in Vegas, right? Yeah, just, I mean, you weren't, there was nothing on it. It was you and him. He was at a fight, Conor McGregor fight, maybe it was.
he was going to the fight, but that was an intimate gathering. It was only
right.
10 of us.
Yeah. No. There was you in the back. It was very few, but there was just a picture of you and Trump. There was no political statement on it or whatever. And boom, you lost a bunch of followers. You got a lot of hate for that. And you loved it. You loved it because you shed what you felt were not maybe your people or whatever. Do you feel like you have your people today? Let's start there. Do you have your people today? Was that something, I mean, for me, it was like, that was really interesting because you still do have a huge following. Does it stand out as a moment in your last few years, or is it more just something I remember?
Yeah, it's definitely a moment. It's definitely a moment because it's a clear indicator that regardless of what you do, you're going to get shit on anyway.
Yeah.
Take the pressure off. Doesn't that take the pressure off? It's like, yo, I can be perfect Mother Mary, and I'm still going to get terrible comments. I'm still going to get hated on. So it actually takes the pressure off. And it was a monumental moment for me because I think for me, it was another piece of Nick finding himself. I think that was a moment of Nick finding himself of like, yo, I don't care. Like, okay, there's going to be a side that likes me and a side that doesn't like me. Like, let me surrender to that. I can't please everybody. And I think I spent so many years, especially speaking and with my brand, trying to get everybody to love me. And I wouldn't want any hate comments. I wanted to be perfect winning streak of all positive comments. And if you look at some of the greatest marketers or the greatest people that have the most attention, they're polarizing. And there's people that like them and there's people that don't like them. I think, though, there's also a sequence to it. I think there's a level of polarity, a level of being polarizing that you can be, but until you have FU money, you got to be calculated. Is that fair to say?
Kevin Hart talks about it.
So if you look at Patrick Bedavid, I think Patrick Bedavid's a great example, was very low key, right? Was very in the middle. And then the moment he got his cash and exited, he was like, what's up? You know, like, and I, like, shout out to PBD, right? Yeah. Like, that was a strategic move. And so I'm strategic in a way where it's like, I'm not sitting on a bill, right? I'm not sitting on a couple $100 million yet. So I'll do it in a calculated way. Mm. So even now, like yesterday when I had this profound breakthrough about let's bridge comedy and personal development, Ratman was like, please, all in, no politics, no religion. Mm. I was like, great, all good. I can make fun of everything else, all good. He's like, until the FU money is there and you want to tat your face or don't do whatever you want, whatever, right? It's like, we're good. And I said, I fair enough,
yeah,
right? And so that was also a moment for me to see how fast people shift.
Yeah.
People are scary, bro.
Yeah.
And the key to not being canceled is to never apologize.
The key to not being canceled is to never apologize. I agree with you.
And that's my hallucination, right? That's my belief. So so I posted the picture with Trump. I did post an aggressive caption where it basically was like, I don't care what your political views are. And if you blame whoever's in the seat of why you're not successful, like you have another thing coming for you.
See, that's not right? to me, that wasn't like an endorsement though. It was just simply a really, like, I'm standing next to a polarizing figure.
Bro,
and here's
26 with 45. You can't celebrate that,
right,
bro. Like
right.
that. Like I'm 26 years old. I'm from Bayville, New Jersey.
Right.
I have no legs of an arm, and I'm in a room full of Dan Bilzerian, Jake Paul, Food God, Jorge Masvidal, and me. What? And y'all can't celebrate that?
Right.
Bet. Okay, great.
Right.
So then the next day, I posted a clip where I jumped out on my balcony, and it was Conor McGregor's voice, and was like, "I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Yeah.
The double champ does what the fuck he wants, you know." Like, and that's what I did, and people loved it and they hated it.
Yeah.
And I think it was just a little. That was Nick. I think about that, that's Nick.
That's Nick, and that's what Nick. That's where when I said let me start there, the next question was going to be that was that Nick? Was that the
that was
Nick? The loss that you lost and that you're bringing back essentially? That was a moment where Nick showed himself in the middle of this run.
I laugh. The inner child comes out like me. That's me. That's me. That's goofy. That's playing. Like, that's me disrupting.
Yeah.
Right. Like intentional disruption. And ultimately, like, people know my intentions are great. For people that look into me, my intentions are great. I've never scammed anyone. I deliver on all the things that I've done. You can background check it. All the things. My intention is pure.
Yeah.
And my thought process now is that if it takes something like that to get you in my spider web and then for me to change your life on the back end, yo, let's. Maybe I was thinking about it all wrong, you know? And so that was Nick showing himself. And literally, I was at the point where I was a little bit burnt out. And when you lose yourself, your soul knows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you don't feel good. You don't feel aligned. And I had that breakthrough yesterday. I had the call. And then I thought to myself, my worker brain was like, okay, I got to sit down and think about funny reels and how I'm going to plan them. And I go out and I'm lifting. And no joke, during my workout, I came up with 5 to 6 viral reels.
Yeah.
Like flooded through me immediately. Like I couldn't stop writing. And I'm like, it could be easy.
Yeah.
I'm like learning, right? Yeah. Like I'm finding myself again. And that would be my intention for everybody listening is if it doesn't feel good, dig on that. Why doesn't it feel good? What's coming up for me? What does feel good? What have I stopped doing that I really enjoyed? what part of me did I lose? Where's the inner child trying to come out, but I'm not letting him come out? Yeah. And I think, and that was my breakthrough, bro. I look at like some of the best entertainers and I'm like, they're just playing. I want to play.
That's a great point.
I want to play.
That's a great point.
And don't they say when you're a master, you can't tell the difference from play and work?
That's right. That's right.
So let's play.
Dude, this is so good. We're at the hour mark. What,
that was fast.
It was. Where do people find out more about you? Where do you direct them for anything that you're doing right now?
OnlyFans. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Could be.
By the way, yeah. Planting the seed. No, I'm just kidding. But you can find me on all platforms at Nick Santanastasso. If you type in Nick Santo, S-A-N-T-O, I am the most handsome guy with no legs, one arm, and a bunch of tattoos, and you can't miss me.
Love it, brother. Appreciate you coming in.
Appreciate you, bro. Congratulations on all the things that you've built. I've been watching you. I've been watching Jamie for many, many years. And to see you, even at your level and a veteran of Earth, finding your spot and finding your inner child, I think it's really beautiful.
Veteran of Earth veteran is the Earth. Nicest way to say an old guy. That is awesome. That is. I'm going to use that.
It's
I'm
all just about the words we use.
I'm just... just a better, it means a lot. And honestly, a lot of what I learned from you, watching you, your natural marketing brain, your ability to communicate, your ability to influence, told you, man, that speech was like, whoa, I just got this room. I remember the moment just from simple advice from you. So,
wow, thank you.
Much appreciated.
Got you, brother.